not frilly enough, but she decided to go with it anyway. How gamely every summer she let Dad drag her around on water skis behind our speedboat, even though she didn't enjoy it much. How corny her sense of humor was until later in life, when she developed a taste for old lady sex jokes. How seriously we both took it when she bought me my first training bra. How she told me she was never afraid of dying until she had children. How, when I agonized over the fatness of my teenage thighs, she insisted I had a better figure than any of those other girls. How she always mothered me more than I wanted, and never mothered me as much as I wanted. How the last thing I learned from her was all about the messiness of what we call devotion.
Sabila is a medicinal plant that grows wild in tropical climates all over the world, as well as the name of Cumbia Latin World R&B-inspired music and visual art project by guitarist Fabiola Reyna, vocalist Brisa Gonzalez, and percussionist extraordinaire Papi Fimbres. They're a young Portland trio, and we thank them for their music this month. Savila. Check them out at Holocene on November 2nd for their Dia de los Muertos show, along with other Latin music here in Portland.
Hello, this poem is called Bill, after my older brother. My name is David Sabin. As he became an old man, nothing at all he said was true. Not that it was a lie, exactly. He was trying to give the proportion of myth to his life, something more in keeping with his dreams. He felt, I feel, he'd lived an unlived life. His generosity and loyalty struck him as incidental to a larger role, one he was meant to play, but somehow was never cast in. Those of us who loved him did not understand this at the time. I was bored with him before he died. I mistook courage for self-aggrandizement. Since then, I've traveled his road almost exactly as I've aged. I loved him when I was young. I idolized him once. He was strong and brave and loved his family, warts and all. In my middle age, when he was old, I did not see him clear enough. I saw a good-hearted man, a solid family guy, and a small-time braggart. All of that was true, I guess. What is also true is he protected me when I needed it throughout my life. He doesn't haunt me like Jim does. I doubt he even needs my love. When he died, though, I could not believe the mythic dimensions of our loss. The role he plays now in our hearts is the one he always hoped to play while he lived.
Hi, I'm Nancy Kassam, and I'm going to be reading a piece called Bringing Dad Home. We brought Dad home after the doctor said no surgeon would touch him. He was too weak, too thin at 6 feet tall, weighing in at 120 pounds. I was the one who took the phone call in the hallway outside Dad's room at the hospital. The doctor didn't even come to see us. He told me over the hospital phone in the hallway. I had to tell my sister. We leaned against the outside of Dad's wall. I've never seen her cry, but when I told her, she came into me and sobbed. We stayed at Mom and Dad's house. We stayed there with the mice and the fruit flies, my sister and I. Mom was in rehab. She fell after Dad went into the hospital and her friends found her lying on the bedroom floor. She fell, she told the doctors at the same hospital where Dad stayed on the floor below her. She fell when she took too many Ambien and drank too many mini bottles of Smirnoff. My mother went to rehab to recover. My father was going home to die. My sister and I waited all day for hospice to bring Dad home. 6:30 at night they arrived, two women. I was impressed. But then they lifted Dad like a sack from the gurney and swung him onto the hospital bed in our family room. It was still ours, even though my sister and I didn't live there anymore. They dropped him like a sack of old man, like he was any old man. He was not any old man. He was my father. He had a master's degree in social work from Columbia University. He was brave. He listened. He quietly believed in God. I'd sleep on the family room couch and wake up throughout the night to make sure the oxygen tubes were in his nose. He often pulled them out. Yes, he was dying, but I still wanted to make sure he could breathe. He'd lie there with his soft eyes open. I wanted him to go. I wanted him to stay. Once, I went to his bed to place the tubes again around his ears and into his nose when he put his hand on top of mine. We were saying our goodbyes. There were no more words.
Did you know Pan de Muerto, or Bread of the Dead, is a sugar-dusted, orange-flavored sweetbread? It is baked either in the shape of a corpse or a dome that is topped with little knobby parts to symbolize bones and tears. The bones are represented in a circle to portray the circle of life, and the teardrops on the bread represent goddess Shamala's tears for the living.
Did you know those with a distinctive talent for writing create short poems called calaveras or calaveritas, which are epitaphs of dead friends describing interesting habits, attitudes, or funny anecdotes?
Did you know Mexican-style Day of the Dead celebrations occur around the globe, including in the United States, South America, Australia, Indonesia, and the Czech Republic, to name just a few? In fact, most countries have their own unique holiday to celebrate the dead.
Did you know in some African cultures, visits to ancestors' graves, the leaving of food and gifts, and the asking of protection from them serve as important parts of traditional rituals? One such ritual is held just before the start of the hunting season.
Did you know?
In Goa, India, the Alamacho Dis, Dead Souls, is commemorated on November 2nd, when forgotten souls are remembered and spiritual charity is done through prayer for the deceased family. A beggar's lunch is held in which food is given to the poor and downtrodden of the village, and they're treated with dignity and respect. Did you know?
During the Nepal holiday of Gaigatra, Hindus celebrate both their recently departed loved ones and the sacred cow. It is believed that the cow guides the spirits of the dead into the afterlife. During this festival, an actual or symbolic cow is used to lead people dressed in costumes reminiscent of Halloween through the streets in joyous procession.
Hey, this is Blair Fell, and this piece is called You Like My Dead Dog, and it helped. An expanded version of it's on the Huffington Post. One April day a few years ago, I walked into my apartment after work and called my sleeping dog. Sophie lifted her head slightly from the carpet and then died. Sophie was in the last stages of congestive heart failure, so her passing was not a surprise. In fact, she did the kindest favor by not only taking care of it herself, but waiting for me to get home to say goodbye. I immediately wept really hard. You know, the kind of weeping you do when you're a kid, the gasping, shaking, bawling, snot running down your nose kind. Then, being a writer and an internet narcissist, I posted a short obituary about Sophie and her incredibly adorable photo on Facebook. In the first 5 hours, the photo and story of Sophie's life generated about 800 likes and 200 comments. I was surprised at how many of my friends and friends of friends had lost a pet over the last year. Suddenly, my solitary grief turned into something bigger. I was crowdsourcing my healing. But then something strange happened. I started noticing, and I need to remind you, my name is Blair, but the comments on my Facebook page were, "Michael, I feel terrible, but she was your best friend and she loved you." Or, "Lisa, I didn't even know you had a dog. I'm so sorry." That's right. people were sharing Sophie's photo and story on their own wall, and their friends were consoling them, not me. I was like, hey, that's my dog. That's my heartbreak. But I didn't, because many of them were offering me or Raphael or Myrna words of wisdom and how reading about Sophie opened up something inside of them. My loss became their loss. Everybody hurts when their pup dies. And by sharing, we all were helping everyone be a bit more human, connected. After days of this, I noticed some people said they were never able to get over the loss of their pets, that their hurt lingered for years. But that's not my story. Instead of a deep depression, I felt a tear-inducing gratitude that I had 10.5 years with that mischievous yellow mutt who taught me how to live and love. After that, Sophie, the bodhisattva, decided it was mission accomplished and time to transcend. I will love my dog forever. She made me a better man. On top of all that, via the story of her life and death and adorable face, she left this final gift of helping me and so many friends and strangers on Facebook. 1,548 likes, 797 comments at last count. She let all of us know we aren't alone. None of us are alone. Social media might be destroying the world, but not in this case. Thanks, Mark Zuckerberg. Thanks, Sophie. Thanks, Internet. Arf. Grrr. Click.
This is my mom's story of the morning my dad died, recreated by me. I'm April Streeter, and this is The Bell. The clingeling of the bell startles her from a dream of doors and keys. Her heart slangs in her chest. She throws her legs over the side of the bed. Her feet touch shaggy carpet. She tries to slow her breath and listen. The bedroom window faces west, yet the dark, seen through its panes, has already taken on a quality of change. Two instincts grip her. The first, to leap up, trundle down the narrow stairwell. Carefully, though, as caregiver, she mustn't fall or injure herself, and charge through the sick room door. The second, equally strong urge is to sit still, gather herself to herself, and perhaps even slip down into still warm bedding. She listens to her house, an 1840s farmstead never truly silent, imagining her hearing, traveling to its four corners, checking entrances and exits for sounds of intrusion. There are none. Yet she senses some shift, as if a cold draft had gone in or out an open window. She pads to the stairs and down, silent as a cat. Outside the oak door to the downstairs bedroom, her hand hovers. Then she turns the knob and pushes. The old door squeaks a woody protest. Frustration rising, heart thumping, she swivels the porcelain knob again and rams her entire body into the door. It gives way, and she is forcefully, nearly face first, propelled to the foot of her husband's hospital bed. She bustled in and out of the room 100 times the day and evening previous, yet now it's as if she's opened a long-shut attic. And in the low light, her husband's body is a startling hulk under the white sheet. She glances to the bell, seemingly untouched on the bedside table, and then to his big hand hanging outside the covers. She clutches it. The palm is warm, but the fingers are cooling, almost cold. Not just her heart, but her whole chest and belly clutches into a painful spasm. Her hand cups his cheek, caresses curly post-chemo hair above his ear. Tears well, and a single sob surges out of her. She drops her head to his chest. The ravaged lungs beneath the skin are still. Perhaps a minute passes. She straightens, turns from the room into her kitchen. Dawn is rising through its east-facing windows. "He is gone," she writes at the bottom of yesterday's to-do list. Then she puts the pencil down.
We'd like to welcome back Baker Dan.
Hola, Baker Dan.
Hola, Benito y Tavita.
Thanks for calling me back to share an experience of Pan de Muerto with you.
Cannot wait. Bread of the Dead.
We decided we needed to have something a little more traditional Day of the Dead to go with our soup for the spirits.
Wonderful. So what are you doing here? You're already at it.
We've gone ahead and measured out all the ingredients. I'm going to start by proving the yeast, and that should speed along the fermentation process and then the rise. We're going to start by taking our cold liquids, quarter cup milk, quarter cup water, and we're putting them on the stovetop. We're going to heat that up, and we're going to add the 4 tablespoons unsalted butter at room temperature. And I'm going to add a little sugar, 2 tablespoons, because you need the yeast to have something to eat. I've warmed the mixing bowl in the oven, and I'm going to put it in the bowl, and then I'm going to make sure it's not higher than 110 degrees prior to adding the yeast, because over 110, you do really risk killing the yeast.
And if you kill the yeast, it won't rise.
Exactly. So we're going to let that cool a little bit. I can go ahead and squeeze the orange for the glazing and put the rind that I have grated off the orange into juice. If you let citrus dry out, you get less flavor and it becomes crunchy. And that's set up for later. And then I'm going to start to activate the yeast. One packet. So while that yeast is fermenting, I have 1.5 teaspoons of anise seed. I'm mildly grinding the anise seed in a mortar and pestle to release more of the flavor. You could use anise seed powder, but I like having a little bit of the texture of the seed, and I like the way it looks in the bread. I'm taking all the dry ingredients, the anise seed, 1/4 cup of sugar, 1 teaspoon of salt, the flour, 3 cups unbleached all-purpose flour, and I'm whisking it together in a small bowl. And I'll use this to add to the fermented yeast, water, and milk. Okay. A beautiful start to this yeast. It's all foamy and creamy looking. Ooh. On top. And so I know I'm ready to go. I'm adding the 4 tablespoons of butter to the warm liquid. And then I'm going to add about 1/2 cup of my flour mixture and 2 room temperature eggs. So I'm just going to gently whisk this all together to create a loose dough, melting that butter down. You can see how that butter's already liquefying. That's exactly what I wanted, because if you use cold eggs and butter, you may stall that fermenting process. I'm going to add 1 tablespoon of orange extract. So I'm just finishing off adding the dry ingredients, scraping it down as I was mixing it to turn out dough onto the countertop with a little bit of that flour mixture left over, and I'm going to knead it to create the gluten strands and also form the elasticity, which sweet bread especially can be known for. And I'll probably do this for about 5 to 7 minutes. Good. So I'm kneading and it starts to get sticky on my hands again, which is great. It means I can add a little bit more flour. You really want a slightly tacky, elastic consistency when you're kneading. It shouldn't tear. It should stretch quite a bit. Those gluten strands need to be fully developed through this process.
Look at that beautiful mound of dough.
Yes, we finished with the kneading. I'm taking a metal mixing bowl and I'm slightly greasing it. You could use oil, butter. So I'm just greasing it lightly, and then I'm gonna roll the dough through. All the surfaces have a little bit of butter on them. You can cover it with saran wrap, moist towel. So I'm going to quickly cover it. I'm going to stick it in the oven, but I'm adding a tray of just boiled water to the bottom of it. So I'm creating a proving drawer to maintain moisture. And that should help keep this process moving along. And because we've now entered our fall weather, room temperature probably isn't going to do it, or it would take what? A few hours to double in size. And we've got the hot tea kettle boiling, so we're gonna put a small pan on the lower shelf of the oven with the boiling water. We added about 3-4 cups of boiling water. Above it, we're gonna add the metal bowl that's covered. We're just gonna close it, and we're gonna set a timer for 45 minutes. There we go. Hopefully it'll have doubled in size by then, and we'll be ready to form our breads. All right, so we've let this rise in the oven. We're going to check in and see how it's doing. When I open the door, it's still warm from that water bath. I'll do a quick peek, and in fact,
wow.
Definitely grew to twice the size. So now we're going to move over to our work surface from the bowl. It's warm and silky. And we're just going to pat it down to reduce some of the air in it. So I'm going to divide it in two. And you could just bake this as one and make a large loaf, or you could make a ton of little rolls.
We're going to get to make one corpse maybe, right?
Yes, I think we can. Okay. She's using a little pastry knife. Cut the dough in two. And I'm going to set one part aside and work with the other one. First, I'm going to form the more traditional round. Before I form it, I do have to cut off about a fifth of the dough that will be used to make the tiers. Larger portion we're just going to make into a nice round.
About the size of a softball?
Yeah. About a fifth portion of the dough. I created a tube with it, rolling it on the countertop surface by separating three fingers and running it across the dough, creating four bones or the teardrops strung together by a thin strand of the dough, and then you drape them across the bread. Wow. When you place those teardrops or bones on the loaf and the round circle in the middle to finish the top, make sure you press them somewhat firmly. When that's done, it'll be about 6 to 7 inches, and we're going to go with a larger person.
Here comes the corpse.
And I'm doing it directly on the baking sheet, which I've lightly floured. Because you have sugar in this dough, there is the chance that it will stick. And I'm going to just work with the dough to create a neck so we have a somewhat distinct head. This dough is going to rise again, so you kind of have to make things a bit extreme for them to show up in the final version. And I'm going to take my knife, I create arms, and then at the bottom, I will create my legs.
Dan, you've outdone yourself.
Yeah, how long do you proof this for?
I'm going to put the whole pan in a large plastic bag, put it in a warm place for about 20 minutes, and let it rise.
The bread is going to rest in peace.
Yeah.
It's before we put it in the oven.
So we're done with our second rise. Everything has puffed up nicely. We're going to brush the breads with milk so they get a nice golden brown color as they bake. We're ready to pop it in the oven at 350 degrees. This will bake between 20 and 30 minutes. All right, oven is baking our bread away. But the glaze is on a little pot on the stove. It is squeezed orange juice, rind from the orange, and then a quarter cup of sugar. So we're going to bring it to a boil and simmer for about 3 minutes, and that'll help it coagulate so it will be runny, but it will stiffen on the dough.
Oh, we can hear it boiling.
Yeah. So once we really see that start off, we're going to lower it so we're just simmering. I can smell it. Can you smell it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've been in the oven 25 minutes, and these...
We have a nice hollow tap.
They're nice and golden brown. As soon as they cool for a couple of minutes and our glazing is ready, we'll decorate it. We want it to be able to drool a little bit, but not run all off. You can tell by cooking it down, removing it, seeing how it handles once it's a little cooled. Prepared the glaze, I'm brushing it on, and now while it's still hot, I'm going to sprinkle on some sugar so it catches, and you have to move really quickly, as I did not. To dust it with granulated sugar gives it that three-dimensional
sparkle.
People use colored sugars, all kinds of things. It's really pretty.
I like how the orange glaze is still really orangey, and you can see some of the bits of zest in it.
It came out beautifully. But you want to eat this bread right away.
Put one on the altar and we can eat one.
Pan de muerto, indeed.
So we've cut down the center of the bread and it's still warm and smelling delicious.
It's just like a little taste of heaven.
This is a great bread. It's full in flavor with anise, with orange, and it tears. The best part of this bread is that inside.
It's so light and fluffy.
But I love the sweetness of the outside.
I do too.
This is often served with hot chocolate, so talk about sweet and decadent.
Wow. Baker Dan, you killed it.
Muchas gracias, Baker Daniel.
De nada.
This supple bread is so tasty. It's something that you can definitely make for Day of the Dead, but you can also make it any time of year, and it will be a treat for your whole family, those with us and the dearly departed.
Perfecto.
If you'd like the recipe, go to our blog, kboo.fm/peace, love, and soup. We'll have all of the instructions and photos there for you.
Fantastico.
Hi, this is David Ciminello. My mother passed of a cerebral hemorrhage in her sleep. Within a day or two, she found a clever way to visit me. This is a final eulogy for Shirley B. The first one came to me the day after she died. I found it on the ground, outside. Dead, wind-blown with desert dirt and dust, a bit too dry, tiny and round, still black dots on orange, bright paper-thin wings, still sound. The next one showed up while I climbed the steps of a foreign church. It landed on my forearm, like one of her silver Monopoly charms, and stayed with me almost until the end of Mass. Then it flew up to a window of ribboning stained glass. Over the next several weeks, they appeared at the oddest of times, one, sometimes two or three, while sipping her favorite homemade lemon ginger tea, while teaching my third grade students their ABCs, while sitting on the toilet, just killing time, or while comforting myself with silly nursery rhymes, while walking off the blues, while trying not to cry. Don't worry, their winged flutterings seem to say. It'll all be all right. Over a dozen showed up the week my father introduced me to his God-fearing, proudly racist second wife. Talk about dead mother angel strife. They completely took over, swirling up to the ceilings, searching for sensible sky, marching across the rug for a final hug. They circled around my bed and gave me a tender kiss upon the head, a sweet goodbye. Ladybugs, they taught me how to grieve. Ladybugs taught me how to fly.
My name is Cindy Spade. My husband passed away 6 months ago, and I wrote this piece called The New Normal. Do you ever wonder how the abnormal becomes the normal? Our journey began years before, chasing an illness that couldn't be found, having feelings and signs that something wasn't normal. My husband, Steve Bell, the witty, positive, avid bicyclist, was diagnosed 18 months ago. We were told that it was in the stomach area, that there was no cure. We digested the news for 2 months before we shared it with our daughter and friends. Bryn turned 10, and 2 days later, her daddy told her, we would fight it, and we should stay hopeful and continue with our lives, like they were. His will to live so incredibly strong, his courage to face whatever came at him, made us all stronger. We found ourselves in a new routine, treatment, recovery, treatment, recovery. Our new normal was working for us, even to the point that at times we forgot. Steve was able to go on his regular bike rides. Being on the trail was his happy place, and going to work made him feel productive and alive. Then things changed. Problems associated with treatment. I went home to explain to Bryn that Daddy was okay, and new realities needed to be faced. A tube coming straight out of his back, emptied into a bag that he wore tied to his thigh. This new appendage required maintenance. We adjusted once again. He couldn't ride anymore, so we started hiking to keep him outside, active, doing regular things. It moved into his bones, a marker of different times ahead. He still had the occasional witty remark or joke and made a smile. To Bryn, I told the hard truth, without doubt, time was limited with him, and that we would be okay. Steve left us to move to a place of no more pain. Our hearts ache every day. We talk about him every day. We go to school, walk the dog, do our homework. We're back to adjusting to our new normal.
Thank you for sharing this with us and for allowing yourself to be vulnerable.
I keep telling myself it's got to help just to feel.
I nursed my father before he passed 10 years ago, and then we had his memorial on Father's Day. So there's that sisterhood of going through that process with somebody.
You know.
Yeah. We have a really hard time processing death.
We do. We're not going to be here forever. Understanding that that's inevitable and hard, but we have to die.
Completely. And when we're thinking of the Day of the Dead, where they have this celebration, joy, and homage, normalizing death. As a culture here in the U.S., you know, we don't have that deep-seated understanding that death is a part of our normal everyday existence.
You know, there's cultures where they celebrate death as a birth in unison with one another, and it should be celebrated and cherished.
You've been listening to Peace, Love, and Soup.
Audio nourishment for both the heart and mind.
With Tave Fache-Drake and Brian Delaney.
We sincerely hope this supersize episode has fed your spirit.
Our hearts go out to all those who have been affected by recent tragedy, either natural or man-made.
In Mexico, the U.S., and beyond.
We leave you with two quotes that particularly inspire us this month.
Mourn the dead, fight like hell for the living.
And I'm just a free spirit with a wild heart and an open road ahead. Next month, episode 11, we're getting back to nature.
Join us for Wild Mushrooms. Thank you again to today's musicians, Sabila. Check them out on Facebook, as well as on Bandcamp, and at Sabila Band on Instagram. Guitarist Fabiola Reina, or Fabi, is the founder of She Shreds Magazine, a publication devoted to female musicians, particularly those playing